From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Hope you'll stick around. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll hear from the great former Georgia coach, Vince Dooley. Obviously, you think about him a lot this time of year, given the fact that Georgia's on its way back to the Sugar Bowl, a bowl that he made famous with dog fans back in the early 80s. Coach Dooley's also got a great honor coming his way really soon. We'll get a chance to celebrate that with him, and he'll tell you about how you can meet him even today. So all that comes up in just a few minutes here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We've also got some recruiting news to get to. In fact, let me start with that right now. And obviously, as I've joked, many of you will now fill in the bingo card, the Dog Nation Daily bingo card on your Jaden Hazelwood box here, because yes, I am going to talk Hazelwood off the top, because I think that Jeff Sintel on yesterday's episode of Before the Hedges pointed out kind of an interesting metamorphosis, I guess, in the recruitment of Jaden Hazelwood and Hazelwood's view of the University of Georgia. I think if you're one of those Georgia fans who wants Hazelwood in this class, and that is, I believe, the correct opinion, Hazelwood as a game-changing wide receiver, he could do big things at Georgia and could be the difference in a national championship for the program. And if you were like me and you believe that, I think you've heard something over the last couple of days that ought to make you a little more optimistic, but the fact that Hazelwood does indeed choose Georgia over the other schools in his top five. Let me set it up this way. Let's go back to October when Hazelwood decommitted from the program. And at the time, Hazelwood was pretty clear about what he wasn't sure about when it came to Georgia, what it was that maybe he didn't like about Georgia, and what it was that he hoped would become different about the program. What he said then is important for the context of what he's saying now. Let's go back to October. Jaden Hazelwood with Jeff Sintel on what can only be described as Hazelwood's dissatisfaction at that time with UGA's offense. Here's Hazelwood.
Is the best way Georgia gets back in it to with you is they open it up, they throw it more, and they...
Exactly. Because for me to go there, that's a major switch up from the offense. Me going to an offense like that will probably take a lot for me to learn. Like, because you got to learn, like, how to block somebody every play. I'm not used to that type of offense. You know, I'm a spread type of offense because that's what I run in high school.
You'd be fine with blocking and all those duties.
Exactly, because I block now.
You know do. What I'm saying? So, as long as they took more shots, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Make it not just for the running backs. You know what I'm saying?
If you're a wide receiver, I mean, who could be faulted for feeling that way? I want to make sure this offense is for more than just running backs. That's what he said at the time. He wanted to see the ball in the air. He also talks about blocking, saying, I'm willing to do that, but I don't want to do it on every single play. I do think this is kind of interesting, by the way, and I don't like to reference too many things on the program that are video only. I like to keep our radio audience and our podcast audience as much a part of this as the video audience is, but if you are watching on video over the last couple of days, you have seen something pretty interesting in that regard. Our buddy Connor Riley did a great job at the state championship game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium the other day when he got video from Hazelwood. A lot of the video that he was able to capture was of Hazelwood blocking, was Hazelwood being a willing blocker and a physical football player. So for the people who want to knock Hazelwood and say, oh, he's not physical enough to be a part of the Georgia offense, he couldn't do some of the same things that, for instance, J.J. Holloman has done in a UGA uniform here this past season. I think the highlights that Hazelwood put together against Peach County the other day in the state championship game kind of confound those expectations. And I think they do prove that Hazelwood is more than willing and more than capable of being a physical football player. But the overall larger takeaway from that audio that you heard from Hazelwood back in October was that he wanted to make sure the Georgia offense was going to put the ball in the air. He spoke to Jeff a couple of weeks after that and essentially restated the same thing. Let me see how they're getting the wide receivers involved. Let me see, are they putting the ball in the air? Are they doing some things offensively that a guy like me is going to want to be a part of, and a guy like me can use as a springboard to the next level to eventually one day become an NFL wide receiver. So with that as a context, listen to Jaden Hazelwood when he spoke to Jeff Sintel after the state championship game on Tuesday. Apparently, based on Hazelwood's own words, he has evolved in his opinion of the Georgia offense, and the description he gives now is certainly a lot more favorable than it was back in October. Here's Hazelwood from just this week.
I feel like they're going to open the throwing game up a little bit. Coach Hankman, good coach. He played in the league as well. So,
how do you feel about Georgia right now? Have they put a push on you lately? I mean, yeah. They've got a couple in homes. Mm-hmm. How would you describe the message you're getting from Georgia right now?
It's the same message, man. You know, since I've been committed, they treat me the same way. Ever since I've been committed and before, they still on me hard.
The Hankton that he references there is Cortez Hankton, the Georgia wide receivers coach, but it's the beginning of that statement that I find so interesting, that Jaden Hazelwood now has gone from saying, I need to see, are they going to put the ball in the air? I need to see, is this an offense that's going to involve the passing game as much as it's going to involve the running game? To now saying, I essentially believe that is the case. They are going to put the ball in the air. I am now, at least based on Hazelwood's words there, and I don't want to read too much into them, but there's a pretty, just black and white description of a more favorable view of the Georgia offense from Hazelwood there than it has been in previous times when he's spoken to Dog Nation. And by the way, I'm not the only one that apparently feels that way. Dog Nation's recruiting insider Jeff Sintel joined us by phone yesterday on Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger, from the site of the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star game where he's working hard on the recruiting trail. Jeff also thought that those words from Hazelwood were pretty interesting. Here is Jeff Sintel's own take on Hazelwood's take regarding the Georgia offense.
I think there is some conflict right there for him. Very interesting how he said that he now believes Georgia is going to open the offense up more and is going to throw it more in the future. That's a pretty interesting statement from Jaden Hazelwood here.
So I don't know that this necessarily means that Hazelwood's going to be all dog. I do think, and Jeff used the word conflicted, I do take Hazelwood at his word when he says that he's not sure what he's going to do yet. I think there's enough evidence to suggest that he really is wrestling with this decision. I think you can hear evidence in some of the things that Hazelwood says that he's probably battling a certain degree of negative recruiting. I think people are trying to fill his head with certain things about Georgia, probably, as is all fair when it comes to the world of recruiting. I think he's dealing with a lot of that right now, but if you're a Georgia fan, the good news, the positive takeaway here is this seems to at least be trending in a positive direction for Georgia right now. All right, while we have some time here off the top of the program, let me also transition for a moment and talk about another very interesting recruit who also won a state championship here in Georgia earlier this week. I'm talking about Tresman Marshall, the linebacker and the UGA commit. And Marshall's one of those guys that, you know, took the visit along with Nolan Smith and others, I guess Trayvon Walker as well, to the Tennessee game for Missouri. Tennessee got blown out that day. Marshall had been talking a lot about Tennessee for a while leading up to that, really saying that he was kind of down to a top three that included Tennessee, Georgia, and Auburn, even though that he was a UGA commit. It seemed like a lot of that kind of stuff had been put to bed, and that Marshall's status in the 2019 class for Georgia was a little more cemented than at one point in time it appeared to be when he said he was enrolling 2-3 schools, Tennessee, Georgia, and Auburn. And then he gave an interview to a Jeff Sintel on Tuesday that I guess can only be described as a little bit weird. Clearly, there was an agenda in mind for Marshall, and sometimes this is just recruits having fun, which they have a right to do, and they have the freedom to be able to do that, kind of just sort of enjoy their moment in the sun. I don't think you could fault Marshall if he felt that way. Or maybe he is having some true last-minute thoughts about flipping away from UGA. Listen with your own ears to what Tresman Marshall had to say about his relationship with Georgia, his relationship with Tennessee, and see where this kind of lands with you. Here's Tresman Marshall from Tuesday.
Go Vols.
Go Vols, huh?
Hey, go Dogs, man. I mean, we'll find out. Sign of day coming up soon. We'll find out.
What are you working through right now? What do you still have to decide?
I still got to decide. I think I decided by now, but I mean, I got a week, so never know. We'll just find out sign of day.
How hard will it be for somebody to pull you away from the Georgia class?
Coach here can pull, no. Coach here can pull, so we just got to find out and see. It's hard to fight against Athens, but Coach here can pull, so we'll just see.
Why did you wear Georgia gloves today?
I have the Tennessee gloves.
I mean, I think there are essentially two readings of what Marshall has to say there. Either he's trying to create a level of mystery and intrigue around his letter of intent when it's eventually signed for Georgia. That's what I believe is the most likely outcome here. Or there is, I guess, at least some chance that Georgia's time spent recruiting a guy at a very similar position, like five-star linebacker N'Kobe Dean, at the expense of recruiting Tresman Marshall. Maybe that's cost Georgia with its relationship with Marshall a little bit. That is, I don't believe, the most likely scenario at play here, but it's at least something worth considering. Ultimately, I believe this is, a level of, I don't know if it's subterfuge, that's probably a bigger word than I should be using, or a level of just gamesmanship on Marshall's part. Ultimately, I do believe he lands in Georgia's class, and Jeff Sintel, once again from Before the Hedges yesterday, kind of gave that same assessment there, his take on having spoken one-on-one with Tresman Marshall. Here's Jeff Sintel once again.
Well, I would say that there's definitely, no matter which answer that is, he's definitely trying to layer on some drama and some intrigue. Kind of sounds like he wants the plot to thicken a little bit about his recruitment. This is a situation where it feels like to me, if Georgia says, We'd love to have you in the class, and you're our guy. I do think Trezvan Marshall will probably stick in the class at Georgia. And it may have already been determined by that point, but it seems like Trezvan Marshall is going to think with his head and his heart on this decision. But Tennessee and Kevin Shear are going to make it pretty hard for him.
Yeah, obviously, Kevin Shear is a coach we have great respect for on the recruiting trail. But ultimately, I believe that what Jeff says there is what really matters, is that Georgia, I think, has made Marshall a priority. I do think Georgia wants N'Kobe Dean. I think Georgia's very happy with Ryan Treble Davis, but I believe it wants Trezvan Marshall as well. I think it wants that level of depth at the linebacker position, given that those interior linebackers especially is a position of need for UGA. There are a lot of very good young players in the program, but there is more depth needed there. And so, therefore, I believe that Georgia would like to get Dean, Davis, and Trezvan Marshall. And you talked to a lot of people, you know, that have followed Marshall's career and seen what he's done down there in Clinch County. They will tell you that he has a chance to be a very special college player. So there is always a lot of drama when it comes to recruiting. You hear some there with Trezvan Marshall. You've heard a little bit now for a while with Jaden Hazelwood. This is the wild ride that we go on this time of year. But the great news here is for Georgia is there are a lot of movement. It seems to be heading in a positive direction. And come next Wednesday, when the early signing period begins, Georgia fans could be sitting themselves up to hear a bunch of good news. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hello to you. Thank you for being with us live on video today, 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed. You can hear us on the radio at noon with our friends in the Classic City on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form pretty much wherever you find podcasts, including the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just really glad to have you with us today. And by the way, really appreciate Marco's Pizza for making it all possible. And Marco's right now invites you to enjoy a tasty two-a-day with Marco's. You can get two medium, two-topping pizzas from Marco's Pizza for an everyday value of just $6.99 each. Say hello, Primo, by ordering yours today from Marco's.com. We took advantage of that deal in my house a little earlier this week, and everybody in the household was happy about that. Huge thanks to Marco's Pizza for being a part of the program. All right, we've got more recruiting stuff later on in today's show. We do our Marlowe's Tavern Minute, looking at the world of UGA signing class heading towards 2019. But for now, though, I want to spend some time getting ready for the Sugar Bowl some more. And last week on our program, I thought we had a fascinating conversation with the legendary former Georgia quarterback John Lastinger, who scored the only touchdown of the game for Georgia in its 10-9 win against Texas in the 1984 Cotton Bowl. And what a great job of telling stories from that moment John Lastinger did. I really enjoyed all of that. And there was something in particular that Lastinger said that really caught my attention. Now, coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to be very lucky on our program today. I believe this is the first time in Dog Nation Daily history to be able to welcome in the legendary former coach Vince Dooley. And there are a lot of things I want to talk to Coach Dooley about, including a great book signing he's got going on today. So we'll do a lot of things with Coach Dooley coming up in a couple of minutes. But one thing in particular I want to get some more insight from him in on is the lead up to that 1984 Cotton Bowl for a Georgia team that had won the SEC each of the three previous seasons and had gone to the Sugar Bowl. That particular year, Auburn, to its credit, had won the SEC. It was going to go to the Sugar Bowl. And Georgia had a little bit of a choice to make in terms of its postseason destination. And as Lastinger, the great former Georgia quarterback, explained, it was actually some of the Georgia seniors who got to be involved in that decision-making process of which bowl that Georgia would go to and which opponent it would play. Here is how John Lastinger told that story last week here on Dog Nation Daily.
One of the things I remember, though, is that the week after losing to Auburn, Coach Dooley called the seniors in and basically, you know, said, here's where it stands right now. You know, if you guys want, we can go to the Fiesta Bowl and face Iowa, or we can go to the Cotton Bowl and play an undefeated Texas team, and we might well have, you know, something to say about who's going to be the national champion. Well, you know, it didn't take but a few seconds for all of us to say, yeah, let's go to Dallas and play in the Cotton Bowl against Texas.
I mean, don't you love that story? And I can't wait to hear more from Coach Dooley on exactly how all that came together there. The fact that those Georgia players said, we want to play against the better team. We want to have a storyline as a part of the national, you know, we're going to help determine who wins a national championship. And Georgia's ultimate win against Texas there, 10-9 in that Cotton Bowl, did indeed play a part in that. And it becomes a great part of Georgia history as well, as these two teams now get ready to do battle again in this year's Sugar Bowl. A lot of folks looking back on what did happen after that 1983 season in the Cotton Bowl. And it was a great job last week by John Lastinger telling those stories. I invite you to go back and check out last week's episode of the program if you missed it, because he also had some great stuff on the current Georgia quarterbacks and just how important it is for Georgia to play games like Texas. That was great stuff. And, of course, the coach that was a part of that was Coach Vince Dooley, who was also a big part of those Sugar Bowls in the years prior to that as well. He's got a great honor coming up as he gets ready to go into the Sugar Bowl Hall of Fame, and he's got a great book signing coming up later on today in Dalton, Georgia. So let's find out more about that and look back on a great point in the Georgia football past. Welcome in Coach Vince Dooley here to Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And we will indeed say hello to Coach Vince Dooley, the longtime legendary coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, and now a great author and a guy that has some wonderful books out there, and he'll be signing some of those at the Dalton Kroger later on today. Coach Dooley, thanks for being a part of our program here today on a Dog Nation Daily. Welcome in. We really appreciate you being here. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. I was hoarse for the past week, but it's slowly getting better. But you can tell it's still lingering a little bit. But outside of that, I'm excited about going to New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl, and also excited about playing Texas, which will renew a game that goes all the way back to 1983 team. In any event, I know that all of the Bulldogs in Dog Nation would rather be somewhere else, but it's a heck of a consolation prize when you go to the Sugar Bowl, and I think it's a great thing and a great opportunity to further the program of Coach Kirby Smart.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, and I think Dog Nation certainly agrees with you on all of that. And before you joined us, I was talking about our show from last week when we had John Lastinger, your great quarterback from that 1983 team, and he was kind of reminiscing about that Cotton Bowl game that year and the great showdown against Texas. And, Coach, one of the stories that he told was the decision that the program faced about which bowl to go to. And the way that John told the story was there was a chance to maybe go to the Fiesta Bowl and play Iowa, but maybe you and the administration had kind of asked the players, would you rather do that? Would you rather play Texas in the Cotton Bowl? And I love the way that John described this, to have a part, play a part, and ultimately who wins the national championship. And the victory against Texas did give Georgia a chance to have a say in that. What are your memories of that choice of, is it Fiesta Bowl? Is it Cotton Bowl against Texas? And why, from your perspective, was Texas and Dallas and the Cotton Bowl the better game for the program at the time?
Well, there's no question about it when you look back on it. We had never been to the Fiesta Bowl, and so it was tempting to go and play an Iowa team that maybe was not as challenging as the Texas team, which was undefeated and certainly would have won the national championship had they beaten us. But in discussing it with the staff, we felt like that we ought to take the more challenging road to pass up the Fiesta Bowl, even though it was tempting to go there, and we've never been, to play a much tougher Texas undefeated football team than taking the easier route, perhaps, in playing Iowa. So the decision was made that we were going to go to the Cotton Bowl and accept that invitation and play an undefeated Texas team and perhaps maybe have an outside chance at a national championship. So it was a tougher route. As it turned out, it was a great decision because we won the game. It didn't turn out that we won the national championship, but nevertheless, it was a great ending to a season, and we were picked at the end of the season as, I think, number four, which under the present conditions would have qualified us to be in that Final Four that we have today.
That's a great point. If the history had been different and the current format was back there then, I definitely think that George would have had a great chance to be a part of that. It is a great thrill to have the legendary former Georgia coach Vince Dooley here on Dog Nation Daily. And if you'd like a chance to meet Coach Dooley yourself, you get a chance to do that today. Coach Dooley going to be signing a couple of his books at the Kroger in Dalton. Let me give you the address here. It's 1365 West Walnut Avenue. That's today from 4 to 6 p.m. Once again, 1365 West Walnut Avenue. Signing his book, Dooley, My 40 Years at Georgia, and his newest book, The Legion's Fighting Bulldog, signing that today at the Kroger in Dalton. We'll tell you more about that coming up over the course of our conversation. Coach Dooley, you also... go ahead, yes.
They also mentioned that we have a children's book called How About Them Dogs, and that's primarily for children maybe 12 or under. Many of them newborn, and it's a good way to get introduced into Bulldog Nation. So that's the third book that we will have available. And Dalton is traditionally at Kroger, and always has always been a great place. There's been a lot of Bulldog fans up there, so some of our greatest signings traditionally have been in Dalton.
That's going to be a great day today, and I know that a children's book will be very popular. Coach, I have two young children myself, and I know they would love to get that one under the tree or in their stocking coming up this Christmas, and I'm sure a lot of the families that are listening right now would feel the same way on that. You were talking earlier about, you know, the importance of playing a team like Texas, and we've seen Georgia get to do this now a couple times in the last couple years, you know, going to South Bend last year, renewing the series with Notre Dame again, getting a chance to do that with Texas right now. From a standpoint of Georgia as it tries to build out its own brand, how important do you think that is to be playing these other, you know, nationally known programs? Texas is one of the 10 winningest teams of all time. Notre Dame kind of the same way. Georgia obviously right there within that same conversation as well. How important are these big name brand programs and bowl games in terms of Georgia kind of building out its own image as a football program?
Well, I think it's very important. I know the fans like football games where there's a great challenge, and I think the players do too. They've got, we're competitive by nature, and to be able to play teams with that prestige is extremely important. And I think that our football teams that really get ready faster. I always have always liked to open with a real good football team, and I think that it goes back to your spring practice. It goes back to your fall practice when you're preparing to play a top team. And Alabama has done that in more recent years, and we did it a lot. I think it really helps the preparation of the football team for the season. And I thought that the last year, the play in Notre Dame up at South Bend, and I've always found that the Georgia fans love to travel. I don't think anybody likes to travel better more than we do, and particularly the places they haven't been. And that's certainly reflected in the ball game up in South Bend this past year and at other bowl games. That's why Georgia is such a popular bowl game, because the fans will follow the team and traditionally have done that. So I think it's a great thing to be able to play. Notre Dame coming up. We got Texas that I think is a great rivalry. They're two wonderful institutions with good football programs. So I'm looking forward to the Sugar Bowl to start with.
You mentioned Kirby Smart a little earlier. How impressed have you been with what he's been able to do in 3 years on the job? And you probably better than anyone knows the challenge that comes with coaching college football at this level. And, you know, you had the highest level of success, and the Kirby Smart's trying to achieve that himself. I mean, what have your thoughts been as you've watched him grow and mature as a coach these past three seasons?
Well, I knew Kirby back when I was athletic director, and he was a football player. He was smart. He's got a wonderful background in coaching, growing up as a son of a coach. You can't help but be around coaching all the time. And he's been in so many different places in preparation for the opportunity. And certainly the last 9 or 10 years, he was at the greatest program, arguably, in the country, at least certainly the best record at Alabama. And there was no question that Greg McGarrity made a great choice when he decided to make a change. And I agree with him totally. And I said that early on when he named it. I didn't say that, you know, just in the last year or two. The very first time that he hired him, I told him it was a great choice, and I made it publicly my feeling on it. And it certainly has proven out to be even more so than I had thought. Great enthusiasm, hired a great staff, and with the idea of what Alabama has been able to do recruiting-wise to bring that same philosophy and theme and attitude to Georgia. And here in the last 2 or 3 years, we've had great recruiting classes. And the way that you compete on a consistently high level is to consistently recruit every year. We were not able to do that as well as Kirby is doing it right now. So I see a great future for Georgia and for the Bulldog Nation.
Let me be among the first to congratulate you on your soon-to-be enshrinement in the Sugar Bowl Hall of Fame. I know that's a great honor for you, and obviously Georgia fans and Dog Nation very proud to see your name go there among some of the other great coaches and players in the history of the sport. You mentioned being excited about heading back to New Orleans. Obviously, we remember, you know, the 80 through 82 seasons where that was the destination for Georgia each of those years. Obviously, you led to Georgia to other Sugar Bowls beyond that as well. But when you look at, and I grew up with that phrase, you can't spell sugar without UGA, and that was obviously a time in which, you know, Georgia fans just live for those moments to go to New Orleans. Georgia's back there for the first time now in a while. What do you think that game means to the Georgia football history? And from your viewpoint, how significant is it that Georgia gets a chance to be back in New Orleans again playing in the Sugar Bowl?
Well, I think it's very significant. I mean, anybody would want to go to New Orleans. It's a great city to visit, for sure. We might have overdone the visiting during our run of championships in 81, 2, and 3. They might have had, I would say that in those days, it was just the normal thing for the SEC champion to go to the Sugar Bowl. In this day and time, that would not have happened because you would have been able to move around. You don't want to go to the same place every year, which we did for three straight years. And I remember some Georgia fans, when we won the championship for the third time, saying, we got to go back to New Orleans. And then we waited 22 years to go back when Coach Mark Rick took the team back there. We kind of overdid it in that respect, but now I think it's perfect. We haven't been to the Sugar Bowl in a while, and playing a prestige team like Texas, I'm very excited about that.
Before we let you go, Coach, and you've been so generous to give us some of your time here today, would you mind telling us a little bit about the process of going from being a football coach and now being an author? The books that you've written have obviously been well received, and some of them touch on, you know, aspects of history like the Legion's Fighting Bulldog, and obviously some of them are a little bit more in the memoir category, looking back on your time there at UGA. But as you said, you've also, you know, published a children's book here as well. How much fun has that been for you to kind of get into that and express yourself on the creative side and get a chance to tell some of the stories that you've collected over the years, and no doubt like events like the one today at the Kroger in Dalton, also get a chance to meet some of those dog fans that have revered you for such a long time. How much fun has all of this been for you, Coach?
Well, it's been a lot of fun to have the book signings because the fans really come. They not only buy a book, but they also will bring two or three items, Bulldog items. I signed a signing last night, a lot of Bulldog chairs and Bulldog various paraphernalia, in addition to the books that they might. I enjoy very much the research. I enjoy being busy. In fact, even now, starting on a revision of Dewey's playbook, which is entitled 34 of Georgia's Most Memorable Plays.
Wow.
And since that time, it's going to now include Kirby and some of his most memorable plays. One that hits me right away is that great catch by Godwin against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
That initially was ruled out, and then thankfully it was reviewed, and I thought that was the key. How about the run of Swift against Auburn for the championship game, and some other key moments. So anyway, and we've got people that have gone into the Hall of Fame since that last edition. Jake Scott Warner, Matt Stitchcomb, who just went in this year. So there's a lot of area to cover, and I enjoy doing the research, and it keeps me tied in with Georgia football, which I love.
So today, your chance to meet Coach Dooley and some of the great stories he's told on our program. He'll tell more of those as well at the Kroger in Dalton. The address, once again, is West Walnut Avenue. It's 1365 West Walnut Avenue. Once again, 1365 West Walnut Avenue. He'll be there from 4 to 6 p.m. today signing Dooley, My 40 Years at Georgia, the newest book, The Legion's Fighting Bulldog, and also, as Coach Dooley described, the terrific children's book as well, which if you've got young kids like me, that's a great way to introduce them to some of the great histories and traditions of Georgia football. football. Coach, it has been a tremendous honor to have you on the program here today. We appreciate you stepping out and meeting some fans today at the Kroger in Dalton, and we'll, of course, look forward to getting a chance to hopefully see you in New Orleans and then back here again on Dog Nation Daily very soon as well.
Well, thank you. All I got to say is go Dogs.
Well said, Coach. Thank you so much for your time on the program here today. And I got to tell you, it's a great thrill for me to have Coach Dooley on the program. And he talked about, you know, all the people that come up to the book signings and they want to get other things signed. You know, we have a pretty big studio here, and you obviously see this, you know, set every single day. But there's another set that we have here in our studio where I've got a collection of some of my Georgia paraphernalia that I've collected over the years. And one of the things that I have on one of those shelves that is kind of a backdrop for some of the other shows that we do is an autographed picture that my grandparents got for me from Coach Dooley when he did an autograph signing and probably a book signing way back in the 80s when he was still the coach at Georgia at the back in Gainesville where I lived and grew up. And that was a great thrill for me back then, and for a lot of new Georgia fans or folks getting a chance to meet Coach Dooley for the first time today at the Kroger in Dalton, they'll get that same experience. There's nothing better than when these coaches and players who, you know, we grew up watching and being entertained by, when they choose to give some of their time back and celebrate those moments and celebrate those memories. That's always a really cool thing, and here on Dog Nation Daily, we're really lucky to get a chance to play a part in that, so really appreciate Coach Dooley being here today. And I know that many of you that can get up to Dalton later on this afternoon are going to really enjoy your chance to see him there. That is just terrific stuff.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
You know, something else that Coach Dooley said as we started our SEC Through that I found to be pretty interesting was, you know, if you go back and look at that 83 season, that's obviously on our mind a lot right now because it was the last time Georgia played Texas. But you had a weird round robin that year where Texas in the month of September beat Auburn. Auburn was very good back then, obviously had Bo Jackson. Then Auburn beats Georgia in November in Athens, and then Georgia goes to the Cotton Bowl and beats Texas. Now, the national champion that year ends up being Miami because Miami beat Nebraska in what was kind of thought of as like game of the century type game when it was played. But Coach Dooley is right that had the 4-team playoff format existed back then, Georgia would have had a strong argument to be one of those four best teams, you know, just given what it had done. It was 10-1-1, only lost to Auburn, tied with Clemson, and you know, beat top-10 ranked Florida. So had there been a top four back then, Georgia would have had a chance to kind of be a part of that, much the same way we looked at a couple of the Mark Richt years and said, ooh, playoff in this year, playoff in that year. Maybe Georgia could have benefited from that. That 83 Georgia team, post-Herschel Walker, by the way, we did talk to John Lastinger about that last week. Post-Herschel Walker, Georgia comes back and puts a nationally recognized team on the field once again. And had there been a playoff back in 1983, I think that there's a chance that Georgia could have been a part of that. Speaking of the playoffs here, I think it's been kind of interesting to see the growth in playoff talk over the last couple of days with the possibility of expansion. I know Nicole Auerbach wrote about that for The Athletic. Andy Staples has written about that at SI.com as well. And there are a lot of people willing to go on the record about this. Danny White, the UCF athletic director, that's probably not a huge surprise that White's touting for this. As it stands right now, UCF is just not simply eligible for the playoff, at least based on the performance of the committee. I don't think that's necessarily wrong, but it is probably worth pointing out that they are going to be locked out forever from a 4-team playoff. He says they've been treated like a JV team. I would say in comparison to the Alabamas, the Oklahomas, the, you know, the Georgias, the team really in those conversations for the national elite, UCF probably is something close to a JV team. But nonetheless, he's upset about that. But you've also got Barry Alvarez, the Wisconsin athletic director. The Big Ten champion has been left out of the playoff now for 3 straight years. The Big Ten as a league has been completely left out of the postseason for the last 2 years. They are upset about that. Ultimately, I don't know how quickly this movement's going to take place. I do eventually believe it will be an 8-team playoff. And I actually think the 8-team playoff should, if it's handled the correct way, should eventually benefit teams like Georgia more so than the 4-team playoff does. I mean, ultimately, you know, the playoff is designed to somewhat prohibit the SEC's total and complete dominance of college football. We know that. But if you're going to truly have something close to fair when it comes to the 8-team playoff, even if you give all the conference champions an automatic bid into the postseason tournament, which I don't necessarily argue against too much, if the remaining 3 spots are true at-larges where you do pick among the best teams on the field, which Georgia would have definitely been here this season, ultimately the SEC should benefit from that. And then when you play those quarterfinal games and get down to the true Final Four, the true Final Four ought to be something representative of what the four best teams actually are, which what the playoff is supposed to be, but this year it honestly did not do. So this will be worth watching, and, you know, I guess there's some opportunity to tear up the TV contract coming up in a year or so, which is obviously what all of this is ultimately based on. So this could be a story worth watching as folks start going on the record about their desire to maybe see an 18 playoff. This is not an SEC story, but it is at least Southern-related, and it certainly benefits or has an impact potentially on Georgia recruiting. Manny Diaz, the Miami defensive coordinator, has reportedly come to an agreement to become Temple coach. Diaz leaving, will that impact guys on the defensive side of the ball that Miami is battling Georgia for in recruiting? There is at least some chance this could have some impact on Tyreek Stevenson, the four-star defensive back. Coming up in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to Matt Schodel from canesport.com. He'll tell us his thoughts on that, and he will also kind of weigh in on the Jaden Hazelwood stuff as well. But Diaz leaving Miami to go to Temple at a time in which Georgia and Miami are battling over some recruits, this is interesting timing, so we'll follow this coming up in a couple of minutes with Matt Schodel from canesport.com. Let me also squeeze in a couple other stories before we get there. Richie Pettibone, a four-star offensive line signee from Alabama, I believe it was back in 2015, has decided he's going to leave the program. This is a little bit like Brandon Kennedy leaving the program last year. You know, as graduate transfers become more prominent, that becomes just more of a regular part of the college football business, this does impact schools like Alabama more so than other places, because you've got guys that are going to have the opportunity to come in and poach some of your developing talent, some of your depth, and Pettibone leaving the program is another example of that. It's not a guy that's likely to start for Alabama, but he can certainly start for some other people. Kennedy would have been a starter for Tennessee had he not gotten hurt. So where he lands could be a pretty interesting story to follow in the time in the future. And let me squeeze in one more thing here as well. Remember Torrey Gurley, the South Carolina former South Carolina player who had predicted South Carolina to beat Georgia back before that game back in early September, went on the Feinbaum show over and over again to say that? Well, apparently that's worked out pretty well for him, even though his pick ended up being wrong. Gurley tweeted out this week that he's not gotten a job with the NFL Network. So whatever that audition turned out to be, I guess it's worked out well for him. He is now moving on the NFL Network. And we'll call that your SEC through. And as I said a moment ago, really appreciate Matt Schodel from canesport.com, a guy who does a great job down there in South Florida, covering the Miami recruiting scene, being here with us today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Matt, thanks for your time. Really appreciate you being with us. Let me start with this, if you don't mind. Manny Diaz, I guess, leaving the program to go to Temple to become its head coach as a replacement for Jeff Collins, who's now at Georgia Tech. Does that have any kind of impact on a guy like Tyreek Stevenson, who's obviously a Georgia versus Miami battle, it would seem, heading towards January when Stevenson makes his decision? The absence of Diaz, does that get Stevenson's attention at all, one way or another?
Well, you know, I've been talking to a source close to Stevenson for the last couple of months now, and I spoke to the source last night, because Tyreek doesn't do a lot of interviews or media stuff. And the source said, you know, it's not a big deal to Tyreek, but at the same time, you know, Miami's now had 3 decommitments on defense in the last 24 hours. Tyreek's going to be on campus this weekend with his mother and sister. And, you know, Miami's going to have to explain to him how they're going to use him, what they're looking for in a defense coordinator, if the scheme's going to stay the same. But, you know, the biggest factor, I think, just talking to people around him for Tyreek isn't necessarily the defensive coordinator, even who's recruiting him. I mean, if Miami is going to win out with Tyreek, it's going to be because of his mother and because of his sister. He's really close with them.
Sure.
They would like him to stay home, and that's really the biggest factor that would help Miami win here.
So I think it's a very interesting point. Obviously, Georgia's kind of dealing with some of the same stuff when it comes to losing its defensive coordinator, Mel Tucker, who's now taking the Colorado job. But obviously, geography and family ties are always a big deal and issue when it comes to some of these recruiting battles. Let me go to the other side of the ball for a moment here and talk about Jaden Hazelwood, the 5-star wide receiver from Atlanta. Had a great performance in the state championship game again this week. And what I was saying before you joined us, Matt, is that I think for a lot of Georgia fans, there's a belief and an understanding of why Hazelwood would choose UGA, if that's indeed the choice that he makes, why he might gravitate back towards the program. But from the Miami side of things, if we were talking to 10 Miami fans right now and we were to ask them, why are you confident that Miami can pull Hazelwood out of the state of Georgia and come down there and play for Mark Richt and that offense down there? What has the Miami pitch kind of been about? And what, from your perspective, is the Miami attraction for Hazelwood, who didn't have them in his top five this week?
Yeah, well, first of all, Miami's pitch always has been to kids. They don't pressure kids. They almost recruit the parents as much, if not more, than the kids. And that's sort of, I mean, look, you're in Georgia. So you know how Mark Richt does this. It's we'll take care of your son. He'll be okay with us. We're going to turn him into not just a football player, but a man. You know, we're going to make sure he graduates. We're going to make sure he gets his grades right. We're going to take care of him off the field, not just on the field. We don't just want him as a football player. We want him as a person. So that's always been Miami's selling point to all these kids, not just Jaden. The reason why Miami fans have reason for optimism with Jaden is, A, he decommitted from Georgia, which he obviously didn't have to do. B, he's taken four visits to Miami, and he's paid his own way on three of them, which tells you, you know, how he feels about Miami. I mean, kids who aren't real interested aren't going to, you know, pay $1,000, $2,000 just to take a trip down to Miami and stay overnight or whatever it may be, drive down, spend the gas, et cetera, all that time. And then thirdly is really Ron Dugans. Ron Dugans is the wide receivers coach from Miami who FSU tried to steal away because he really is an outstanding recruiter. So Ron Dugans has built a very strong relationship with Jaden from everything I've heard, probably the best assistant coach relationship with Jaden. And then a fourth factor in all this to consider is Jeff Thomas is gone. Amon Richards is gone. They were both supposed to be back, for their senior years, but you know, Amon had a career ending injury and Jeff Thomas left the program abruptly. And then also Lawrence Cager, who would probably be the top returning receiver just in terms of being a veteran who's played a lot of games, we believe he's going to be transferring, and I'm sure that's a selling point as well to Jaden. So the opportunity for Jaden to be coached by a coach he likes, the program he's been down to see a bunch of times, and probably have a big role as a true freshman, given the depth chart, that's why Miami fans are optimistic with him right now.
I think you said something very interesting off the top of that, which is I think a lot of Georgia fans kind of assume that the pitch for Hazelwood is more about the glamour and the limelight of being down there near South Beach and, you know, Miami, which we think of as kind of a sexy city. But you say in cases like this, it's really more about the family connection to Mark Richt. And obviously, you know, Richt is an authentic guy when it comes to stuff like that. It sounds like you're saying that something like that may actually be a stronger pull, Ron Dugan as well. But stuff like that may be a stronger pull than the notion that you can go play in one of these kind of glamorous cities like Miami.
Yeah, well, this is the thing with Jaden. I've talked to Jermaine Smith, who's his coach over at Cedar Grove, several times. And just from talking to Coach Smith, because, look, Jaden doesn't, like Tyreek, Jaden's under the radar in terms of media interviews. You know, he's talked to me, I think, once, okay? And I can't think of a reporter that he's talked to very often unless you actually go to his school and do an interview with him and just sort of get him that way, which obviously, being in Florida, that's a little tough to do. But regardless, the coach talking to Coach Smith, okay, he says Jaden's a very level-headed kid. Like, he wants to take his time, do his due diligence. He's not one of these kids who's sold by glitz and glamour. And, you know, a lot of people in Georgia probably do picture, when they think of the University of Miami, they think of South Beach and the ocean and models and, you know, sunbathing. And really, Coral Gables, you know, I don't know Georgia very well, so I can't compare it to somewhere in Georgia, but Coral Gables is not near the beach. It's not near the city. It's very suburban. Okay, it's an upscale community, which really is not country-like and it's not city-like. It's right in between. Okay. So it's not something where, you know, if a kid wants to be partying all the time, they're probably better off going to the University of Colorado than they would be going to the University of Miami.
That's kind of an interesting perspective. Let me do two quick things before we let you go. Matt, I think it's probably safe to say that Georgia fans had a little bit of a complicated relationship when it came to Mark Richt. There was great appreciation for the things that he did. There was also a little bit of a restless disappointment for what he didn't do, you know, get Georgia to the playoff, you know, win the national championship. At Miami thus far, in the brief time that he's been there, it seems like there's room for kind of some of the same kinds of feelings. How do you think Miami fans feel about Richt right now?
It's complicated. I mean, he was there in Georgia for so long, and I mean, we did so many stories with Georgia people, how much they loved him. I mean, when was the last time he had a coach fired and the fans were all like, oh, we wish him the best, we hope he really does, you know, great things at Miami? I mean, that doesn't happen. He built up so much goodwill at Georgia, and Miami fans are just a different breed. You know, they're used to winning national titles, even though that hasn't happened in quite a while. They're used to winning double-digit games, even though that hasn't happened other than last year in quite a while. So there's not a lot of room for goodwill with any Miami head coach. You know, Miami fans have basically run the last three head coaches out of town, Al Golden, Randy Shannon, Larry Coker. Hopefully I'm not missing one of them. So there's always an issue when the team's not doing as well as fans want. And the perception right now is the team is not doing as well as fans want. They want to blame the offensive coordinator this year because the offense was, let's face it, just flat out bad. Well, guess who the offensive coordinator is? It's Mark Richt, okay? So not only does he get the head coach problems, but he also gets the offensive coordinator blowback. So Mark Richt really has his work cut out with Miami fans. I don't think he honestly understands sort of how bad it is, because I don't think he's looking at the message boards and sort of some of the complaints that we're getting from our subscribers and from just Miami fans that I know personally with the direction it appears this program's heading right now. I mean, recruiting is not looking real good. At the end of this weekend, they're probably going to have, well, I shouldn't say the end of this weekend, but I expect Anthony Solomon to decommit to Michigan. So once that happens, they're going to have 12 commitments with, you know, 4 or 5 days to go until signing day, and they were anticipating signing 25 to 27. So that coming on the heels of a subpar season in Miami fans' eyes is not a good situation for Mark Richt in town right now, and he needs to win next year or it's going to be really bad, in my opinion.
Let me finish up with this, Matt, if you don't mind. Georgia's obviously somewhat interested in the Florida recruiting landscape right now, given the fact that for the first time kind of in a while, Georgia and Florida are going head-to-head over some recruits. A lot of times that hasn't really happened as much as maybe some people might think in terms of both those schools battling over the same player. But for a couple 2019 recruits, that is the case. When you look at Richt at Miami and what, you know, is trying to be built there at Florida State, and what Dan Mullen's trying to build there at Florida, how do you kind of handicap this recruiting race in the state of Florida? Are recruits buying what Dan Mullen is selling right now? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Willie Taggart seems to be doing a good job of cultivating relationships. Miami has a lot to sell just from its, you know, geography and the other aspects that you pointed out. How do you kind of handicap this Florida recruiting race right now? And where do you think the Gators fit into that at this moment?
Well, yeah, it seems like every year there's a winner in Florida in the recruiting wars. I mean, look, there has to be every year. And I think right now it's going to be Florida that's the winner in the state of Florida, simply because Florida State and Miami are having a lot of perceived problems from the outside that affects recruits. You know, it's not like the old days where you could sort of hide a local recruit and grab him at the last minute, or, you know, develop a relationship for 4 years or 3 years with a kid and someone else only has a, you know, 6 months relationship with the kid. Locally, because Florida is a hotbed of talent, just like Georgia is, if not more so, not to be disparaging. But so bottom line is, Miami's losing kids out of state to programs like Georgia and Alabama. The top kids are leaving. Top kids from Miami area and all the way up to Jacksonville are going to the Florida program now. You know, in the last few years, guess what? It's been Florida State that's sort of been taking Miami's kids. This year it's more Florida if they're going to do that. You know, guys like Summerall and Zipper are big-time Miami versus Florida battles. You have your own battles with Florida now, too. But, yeah, I think Florida right now is the power in Florida in terms of recruiting, simply because they seem like they're on the upswing and they have things going in the right direction. And right now Miami and Florida State don't. And, you know, that's a tough situation for Miami and Florida State right now.
Matt Schodel from CaneSport.com. Matt, we really appreciate your time. If folks want to find out more from you, see you on Twitter, something like that, how can people get in touch with you online?
Yes, at CaneSport, or you can go to CaneSport.com. We're part of the Rivals Network, so Miami.Rivals.com.
I really appreciate your time, Matt. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon. Really good stuff there from Matt Schodel, CaneSport.com. Kind of an interesting look at the Tyreek Stevenson recruitment and the Jaden Hazelwood recruitment, and what could be next in the state of Florida as Dan Mullen tries to make some hay with guys like Trey Sanders and Kyrie Lam and some other names like that. Interesting insight from Matt Schodel there. It's our Marlowe's Tavern Recruiting Minute here on this Thursday, and we'll do that for you every day leading up towards signing day. We'll get you update on all the big signing day news, and we'll do our part to help make your holiday shopping go a little easier this year. As Marlowe's has said, it's holiday shopping without the heavy lifting. Right now, when you buy a $50 Marlowe's Tavern gift card, and you can get that either at your neighborhood tavern or online at marlowestavern.com, they've also got a gift for you as well. You can get a Michelle Brute bottle of sparkling wine. What a great way to celebrate the new year with the Michelle Brute sparkling wine, courtesy of our friends at Marlowe's Tavern. The even better offer, though, is this. When you buy a $100 Marlowe's Tavern gift card, not only do you get the Michelle Brute sparkling wine, they're also going to give you a bonus $20 Marlowe's Angeles Tavern gift card, and if I could be so humble as to suggest that you keep that one for yourself and treat yourself to a great meal here as we head towards the holiday season. You'll understand soon why they call it holiday shopping without the heavy lifting. Take care of all the folks on your list with Marlowe's Tavern gift cards, either at your neighborhood tavern or online at marlowestavern.com. All right, really interesting stuff, and kind of interesting to hear Matt Schodell say that when it comes to that battle in state between Miami, Florida State, and Florida, that Matt predicts it's going to be Florida who's the in-state winner this year. There has been some movement, I guess, as of late when it comes to Kyrie Lam with the Gators. We'll wait and see on Trey Sanders. They get a chance to host him. I believe it's this weekend for the final weekend heading towards signing day, although if my information is correct, that may not be an official visit for Sanders, but an unofficial. So Mullen going to try to make some hay there with both Florida State and Miami kind of dealing with some hard times on the field. So that's kind of interesting stuff there. One way or another, though, we do think that Georgia's going to win its share of head-to-head battles with Florida, much like it's won head-to-head battles on the field as well. In fact, it's been 775 days since those lousy stinking Gators have beaten Georgia on the field. It's our Gator Hater Updater. By the way, one more piece of news to get to. Looks like Tyson Summers, an analyst at Georgia, may be on his way with Mel Tucker to Colorado as defensive coordinator. We'll tell you more about that as it becomes available. And see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.